You're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate. Our phone number is 564-1290 or 866-564-1290. Go to RadioRealEstate.com, RadioRealEstate.com, to listen to past programs and find real estate information. Call me after the program at 452-2428, 452-CHAT. Welcome back. Robert Brugman, today's guest. Sprawl, A Compact History is the name of his book. Sprawl, A Compact History. And we've been talking about density and railroads and cities. And we're going to talk a little bit about L.A. Could they have actually kept up with the demand? And the chicken and the egg theory in terms of do highways create congestion? And that'll segue into perhaps adding our third lane in Santa Barbara. Will it stoke the fears and bring more people, as some claim? First, we have a caller. George, welcome. Thanks for calling Radio Real Estate.
Well, Mark, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
It's a quick question in regard to eviction notices like the 3-day and the 30-day. Has that changed? Or what are the rules?
Oh, well, that was a you got a real estate question. you kind of threw me there.
Okay. The next one's coming after that, which has to do with the thing that we're having on the Chapala Corridor. Okay.
Okay. Good. Now, a 3-day right, a 3-day notice to pay or quit, something like that.
Right.
Now that has not changed.
Okay.
And in terms of 30 days, I know. And I'm not the rental expert, but I know we've talked about that. There was a trial run where they wanted to make a 60-day notice required if someone had lived in the house for better than a year and you wanted to, I can't remember exactly, it was either raise the rent or evict, you wanted to use 60 days instead of 30 days. But that, whatever that was, that had has passed, and it's reverted back to the 30 days, but according to some savvy landlords, they do try to utilize the 60-day notice whenever they can as a courtesy.
Right.
But my understanding, and again, I'm not the rental expert, you'll double-check this, but it did revert back, and it's not law on a 60-day notice.
Okay. The next question, I wanted that I pull of them here today. But we're doing the Chapala Street or the Chapala Corridor, quote-unquote, or Chapala Canyon, where they're in the 500 block of Chapala Street. They're putting up some 45-foot Spanish facades, which is right on the same block as the Victorian neighborhood called Brinkerhoff Historic District. And of course, the people on Brinkerhoff are questioning where did that come from? You know, you're going to put a big 45-foot building right smack next to maybe a 1- or 2-story Victorian house, and basically the urban sprawl which we're addressing here, which has the neighborhood preservation thing that's going on, so that you don't have somebody's 4-story mansion sitting next to you. Does your guest have any clues as to about what other communities are doing?
Well, Robert, just so I can give you a better picture, Chapala Street is one block parallel to State Street, which is our main drag,
right.
that feeds down and empties at the ocean at the pier.
Right.
And that's been, it used to be 2 lanes in each direction. They changed it to 1 lane and widened the sidewalks and made it much more pedestrian friendly. There's a big push to close it completely to traffic and parts of it. So one block over is kind of simple, old-style retail that has, there's a couple of blocks there that they're pretty much demoing and creating this, as George the caller called it, a Chapala Corridor. Any comments on his question?
Well, no, except to say that in planning, like many other things, there are lots of fads and styles that come and go, and one of the most important here is the idea that you'll have a street and you make it pedestrian, and then you need to then beef up the transportation on either side, both often with parking structures and then with faster traffic. And nothing right or wrong about that, but one thing that is interesting about it is the way that it mirrors the suburban shopping centers, that suburban shopping centers were so successful not because of the car orientation so much as the fact that they're pedestrianized at the center. And that meant that once you got out of your car, it was actually a denser pedestrian experience than you had in a lot of central cities. So I think it's very interesting, this constant back and forth competition between edge, periphery, and center. And Santa Barbara, I think, is trying to exploit its downtown historic character, and absolutely rightly so. But in doing it, ironically, as your caller points out, you can destroy some of the very thing that people used to come for.
Yeah, thank you, George.
Great, thank you, guys.
Great,
thank you very much.
Yeah, great question that got, you know, that is a sad fact. It is a sad fact. Now, I know you've been to Santa Barbara. I don't know if you've been here since we took the lights down, but you do remember the lights on the 101.
Oh, sure.
Now, we built something called Paseo Nuevo, where they took a couple of, you know about that?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, my. I didn't realize.
And again, you know, we're looking at something very interesting. We're looking at a response to suburban shopping centers. Now we're using some of the same techniques in the central city, and part of that has to do with physical form, but part of it also has to do with management practices, having the shops stay open the same hours, having all kinds of synergy, having advertising for all the shops at once. That is a particularly, to my mind, attractive and successful example. I think that was Field Paoli Architects. And you have to remember that they are the same architects that very often do things out in the suburbs, because suburbs are now increasingly doing things called city centers or ye olde towny center for some of the very same reasons. So it's a very interesting way that city and suburb are constantly going back and forth on these building types.
Yeah, it is a battle. It is a battle. The city of Santa Barbara, of course, the La Cumbre Shopping Center is part. It's in the city,
mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, they kind of jazz that up a little bit, but it's kind of on the outskirts. And I think they're really competing with what happened way out in now the new city of Goleta, where they put it's called the big box kind of centers, you know, with the Home Depot and the Costco. And they lost, I think, you know, they're fearful of people shifting out there and buying. A controversy that came up was this parking structure downtown, kind of trying to help a little bit more of the upper State Street. If Paseo Nuevo is kind of, you know, mid or the 800 block of State Street, they wanted to go up to the 1200 block, and they built this parking structure. And I didn't understand the aversion to this parking structure. People made it seem like, you know, they built a giant mousetrap where they were killing small animals in downtown Santa Barbara. It's an unbelievably beautiful building. You drive down Anacapa. I really, you know, and so you need, if you pull the people in with their cars, then they're going to get out and walk.
Yeah, and isn't it interesting that the very same things that are animating people who say no sprawl at the edge animate people at the center of cities? So the only thing that a lot of people hate worse than that sprawl out there is higher density close to them in the city. And I think that that gives you a good suggestion that it isn't necessarily the sprawl or the low density itself. I think in many cases it's just change. And change is, when it's fast change, and certainly you're seeing fast change in Santa Barbara and throughout California, that's very threatening to a lot of people, no matter what form it takes.
You're familiar enough with Santa Barbara, it sounds like. If you're against sprawl and you're against high density, I guess we're just against just more growth. I mean, a lot of people in Santa Barbara, and part of me at times is probably in that group where, you know, how much can we accommodate before we basically, you know, like we talked about the Chapala Street corridor, you know, you build this up to replace and you just lose it all. You know, people come here and to feel this small town and to appreciate the low density. And if all you're going to do is either expand on suburbia or create density, but is that the way of the world? You know, are we fighting? Is it something that's a battle you can't fight?
Well, you have a particular problem in Santa Barbara, and it's a very good problem to have. It's the same problem that you would have in Litchfield, Connecticut, or you would have in Boulder, Colorado. That is, you're a place with magnificent natural assets, a wonderful historic built environment, a place where everybody wants to be. I think much of America would move to Santa Barbara if they could. So in places like that, it's very understandable that people who have been there for a long time want to keep things the way they are. On the other hand, there's this tremendous pressure from all those people outside who would like to be there. Now, as I say, this is a problem that an awful lot of cities would like to have and can't have. There is no answer to that. It's not an easy thing to say whether you want to privilege the people who are there with the wonderful lifestyle they have, or whether this is such a nice lifestyle so that it should be open up to a whole lot of other people. I don't think there's a right or wrong to it, but it certainly causes a lot of acrimony in the public debate.
We can make it look like Hawaii. Just, you know, start building high-rises. We could fit a lot of people in here.
Well, absolutely, you could.
How about you? Maybe we can get you to the University of Santa Barbara and we could sell you a home out here.
Well, if they could pay me enough to buy a home out there, I'd probably come.
Well, you know what? I was going to ask you what houses, a medium sales price house around the University of Illinois in Chicago costs.
Well, the Chicago area has not been a very high priced area, and the thing about it is that because you can very easily go to, there are 8 million people in the Chicago metropolitan area, and it's relatively easy to get to the university. You have a huge range of housing, and when you're in a big city, in an old city like Chicago, one of the escape valves you have is you have a lot of housing that's really in somewhat bad repair in neighborhoods that are just starting to gentrify, and so it's possible still in a place like Chicago and many other cities in the north and east to get very good inexpensive housing if you're willing to sit out the change in the neighborhood until it comes up to middle class standards.
Okay, we'll take a break, and in the third segment we will talk about the LA and the chicken and the egg theory and build it and they will come. Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate. The guest is the author of Sprawl, A Compact History, Robert Brugman. Stay tuned, you'll be right back.